people to get their butts in here. So you want to start by like introducing yourself and
sure, if you want,
go down the line there. Yeah. All right.
All right. Action.
Action.
Action. All right. I'm Tom Berdinsky. I'm a filmmaker from Muskegon, Michigan. So I'm like a West Coast filmmaker. West Coast of Michigan, anyway. And I'm probably best known for the Italian zombie movie, which was an homage to and a movie that kind of parodied European horror movies from the 70s and 80s. That came out in like 2010. I played a lot of film festivals and stuff like that, and I followed that up with a couple other films, a giant rubber monster movie and Noir Armageddon, and worked on a whole bunch of movies doing soundtracks. Dawn of Dracula is probably the best known of those. But I do a lot of stuff on a lot of people's films and occasionally direct and write my own.
That's awesome, man.
My name is Ryan Blazek, filmmaker out of Grand Rapids, not quite as far as Tom over on the west side in Muskegon.
You're not west coast.
West side. My biggest movie was a feature that came out last year called Monsters Among Men. It was a full-length kind of thriller, horror movie. I did a short called The Suicide King, which was, I guess, more of a crime thriller, a 25-minute crime thriller that came out a couple years ago. I've also done some writing, helped Tom out on some of his stuff. That's most of what I worked on.
I'm Angela DeGarmo. I'm a filmmaker from Owosso, Michigan, which is halfway between Lansing and Flint, so where they make the laws and where they break the laws. So I worked on Monsters Among Men with these two fine gentlemen. I got to act in that. I don't know how much more acting is in my future. I'm doing a lot more writing and directing, producing.
Cool.
I worked a lot the last couple years with Rebel Pictures out of Lansing. We've done some 48, 36-hour film contests, which are so much fun, but very difficult and very, very interesting.
It seems stressful.
It is, but like going to a con, there's like a, you have this high you ride
right.
while you're on it, and then as soon as it's done, you just crash.
I prefer the 4-year.
Four years.
That's more in my range.
I don't know if I would rather spend 48 hours making one single movie or 48 hours doing 30 seconds of your tracking.
True.
Torture that you've been
right.
doing.
So, fair enough.
It all kind of balances out in the end. Started out volunteering on Day Planner of the Dead, which has
love that movie.
Yeah,
Kyra Schoen and Gary Striner and Tom Sullivan in it. Just hooked right from the beginning.
Yeah.
It was so much fun.
Hilarious.
Oh yeah, that was a great script, and through that met all of you guys. So my life is way better.
Most importantly. Coming the Reaper.
Yes. The Reaper.
That's
together.
Right.
Yeah, we were both in it.
I learned a lot of production, on set supervisor stuff on that set that I use quite often now. So it's
nice.
A good learning set.
Well, don't quit acting. Don't quit acting. You're a fine actress.
Yeah.
You can do everything.
Is acting
really
more stressful?
Yes, acting is way more stressful.
Really?
That's what I think, too.
For me. I mean, I've been on set with you, but I have been with you, and you don't show it at all.
Thanks.
You are always on and relaxed and joking around, and then you can turn it on and be sad and scared. Boom. So
perfect.
I don't know how you do it.
That's exactly acting.
Right? One of the first films that's still in post that I did with Rebel Pictures is called Reverb. And I can't wait for that to come out and show all of you. But it's a Twilight Zone-y sort of situation where a guy commits a hit and run, and then a year later he's haunted by the song that was playing on the radio. So wherever he goes throughout that night, that song keeps playing. So it's Halloween night, and there's multiple different bars that he goes to and drinks at. So I had to go. I was production supervisor. Went from one set it up. And then I just played leapfrog with them. Set up one place, went back and tore the other place down.
Wow.
And just to keep the whole thing rolling, plus I was an extra like 15 times. So it's going to be a drinking game when it comes out. How many times can you spot Andy in a 10-minute movie? And we'll
movies.
All be pretty drunk by the end. So.
Yep. Excellent.
So we were talking about having this be like taking your film beyond your region. because I think that's something that everybody would be interested in. I know I am.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, how do you do that?
How did you do that?
Yeah. Yes, yes.
When Italian Zombie movie came out, the first one that I did, that was very early in 2009, which is when Facebook was just sort of picking up some steam. And so I did the social media thing, and in those days, again, it was like a whole new thing, and people were so excited about movies on Facebook, and I could use that to reach out. But probably the one thing I did that maybe people haven't thought of that really helped get my movie out of the region was I started connecting with horror hosts from all over the country, and it really happened through Facebook. But I was fortunate enough to go to a Horror Hound convention, which mm-hmm. was a horror host reunion. And they had like 100 horror hosts from all over the country there. I didn't really even know what a horror host was at the time, other than Elvira. Everybody knows Elvira.
Right.
So I knew kind of what they did, but I didn't know how they operated and how they got movies and what, you know, I just didn't know much about it. So I started talking to them, different ones. Midnight Mausoleum, of course, the girls from there, I met them right away because they were cute. And I was like, oh, I'm going to meet these two girls in here. But anyway, it just sort of, you know, sort of snowballed into all of a sudden all these horror hosts wanted to know about my movie, and they wanted to show it.
Right.
And I owned all the rights to it, and so I did a little bit more research on it. It's like most of these horror hosts, yep, they have their show on at 11 at night on a Saturday when nobody's watching, or it's at 2 in the morning on a Sunday, but it didn't matter to me whether people were watching it or not. It was getting advertised.
Right.
They were hearing about Italian zombie movie. What's this Italian zombie movie I keep hearing about?
Right.
And that was the best thing the horror host did was they're good at promoting. They're
promoting
their show. It's like, hey, we've got this new movie. We're not showing the same old, you know, stuff we've been, you know, whatever, all these old movies they show from the 40s and 50s and 60s. We got a brand new movie that
we're
showing.
Plus they have a little bit of solidarity.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they all and that's how they would connect, you know, and they're in competition too. They compete with each other. So, wait a minute, Horror Dungeon did that one? Well, Count Gore Duvall's gonna do that one, and I'm going to be funnier than they were. And it just spread like wildfire that way. And I really didn't have to do much of anything. They cut it because I told them this isn't really a, you know, G-rated movie. There's some mostly gore. There's no swearing in it to speak of, but there's a lot of really gross stuff, and it's kind of lewd. There's some lewd characters because it was based on Italian horror from that era. But I said, go ahead, recut it. Do whatever you want with it.
So they actually recut it?
They would cut it to fit their, whatever they could show and do their thing, and I was totally fine with it because, again, I thought, of all those horror hosts showing it, maybe, let's say all 100 of them showed it, you know, maybe what, 500 people saw it?
Right.
You know?
Right.
I didn't care because that was just word of mouth getting out all over the country. I had them in California and Florida and all over the place, and they just, as soon as they knew I was willing to do it, they latched on, and then I let the internet guys do it too, the guys who just have shows on the internet,
mm-hmm.
and they kind of riff the movies at the same time along the side. There's like a chat room going. And I can't remember the couple of them that I did, but Sigmund Zoids, The Void, he had them. So the people be riffing my movie while it's going on, I don't care. Again, it's just free advertising.
That seems pretty fun.
and on top of that, people don't generally, when they're doing that on their computer for a while, they probably aren't going to watch the whole movie.
Right.
But maybe they'll see 15 minutes of it and go, you know what, I'm going to come back and revisit that someday. And then they hit me up and say, hey, where's your movie for sale at? Oh, on Amazon. Get it on Funaki. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Tons of it. Anytime I was on a horror host show, I got a huge bump.
Wow.
And I think the best one was probably Midnight Mausoleum. I bet I sold 150 movies after the show. And it showed on their show. And I know people watched it because they would tell me about it. And, oh, we love the girls. You guys had so much fun.
Right.
So I actually went to their show to do that one. Most of the other ones, I just sent it. And any filmmaker, I think, who's trying to promote something could do that today. And these horror hosts, they'll show up one time, they'll be done with it.
Yeah.
And then, but meanwhile, you've all of a sudden got this outreach.
Mm-hmm. Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
And they're all over the country, too.
Exactly. Yep.
That's cool. How long is that movie?
Italian Zombie movie?
Yeah.
There's actually two of them. Italian Zombie movie part one and part
two.
So when I first put them out, it's like 4 hours of zombie movie there. But they didn't care. They'd show the whole thing.
They ran it as?
Sure. They ran it as part one, part two. They ran it all together. They cut it whatever they wanted to. Then I cut it down and I made the Italian Zombie movie the Grindhouse Cut, which is basically combining the two movies to just one two-hour one. But everybody tells me the best version of it is the one that's completely uncut that I gave to Midnight Mausoleum.
Okay.
And so it's two-hour ones and it has our skits in between with me and the girls playing Frisbee. And we call it summer camp. So it was Boys Against Girls summer camp skits in between. And that seems to be the one everybody still talks about and enjoys. And I do, too, because those gals were a lot of fun to work with. So
that's fun.
But, yeah, it was probably the one thing that I think people overlook. Social media is great. I mean, Instagram, when I get my next movie out, I'll be all over Instagram and whatever's the hottest one,
right,
you know, at the time. Facebook seems to be kind of petering out a little bit from that standpoint, because what do the kids say? My grandparents are all on Facebook, you know.
Right.
Okay, if I, depending on who you want to appeal to, but I'll say this too. Okay, your grandparents are on Facebook. Your grandparents buy movies.
Right.
Kids are stealing movies, you know.
Yeah.
My movie's all over the torrent
sites.
Yeah,
and your grandparents will watch them.
But exactly.
You can watch them for like 3 minutes.
They want the physical media.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, hey, and I make homages anyway.
Right.
Older style movies anyway.
Right.
So that's what worked for me.
Cool. What about you? Because I watched your movie on Amazon.
Amazon, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a big route. Yeah, a little bit different what we did with Monsters Among Men than what Italian Zombie movie did. I think part of what we did was, I think, festivals, and then streaming, obviously, Amazon, and then the reviews have helped,
that's
too.
That's a good point, too. Yep.
Yeah. As far as getting out of your region, the most success we had was actually probably our first festival, which was the International Vampire Arts and Film Festival. Which is in
Transylvania.
Yep, it's in Romania. It's in the Transylvania region of Romania. It was a vampire festival that was held at like the Citadel where Vlad the Impaler was born.
really?
Yeah. Yep. And it's held every year. It's a vampire. And our film is a vampire film, so it's a vampire specific film festival. And so they picked it up, and I think they were interested, one, because it hadn't been shown at a film festival before. So that was our international premiere, and then it also got nominated for Golden Stake Award, which was like their best picture award. Mm-hmm. And so I think that kind of helped, you know, advertising, getting the word out on our film. Yeah, we got it on Amazon, and it's also on Amazon UK, and so it's streaming in the UK on Amazon. We actually got a couple people who had contacted me about it who hadn't heard about it and did some reviews in Great Britain. Mm-hmm. And then I also hooked up with an online distributor called FilmHub that you basically submit your deliverables to them, and then they will get it out on the internet through other streaming outlets, and it will take us, you know, a cut of every view. And so through them, it's on, like, Pantaflix. It's on a German streaming service,
wow,
which I can't even pronounce.
I know, I was so
geeked
by that.
I don't know.
Wow.
Vimeo, and it's Screenbox it's on. And then kind of on top of that, using a lot of Tom's connections for reviews, we sent it out to a lot of different reviewers kind of at different parts
like
of the
country. Like internet reviewers? Or like
podcasters?
Yeah,
bloggers from all over. And, yeah, I mean, it's nicer for you because you could probably send them an online version to watch.
Yep.
I had to actually mail them out screeners, but I didn't jip them there either. When I sent somebody a screener, I didn't just send them a DVR with the Italian Zombie movie written on it in crayon or whatever. I would send them the whole package, the whole deal. I'd put a press kit in there with pictures. I'd send them a CD so they could, if they wanted to upload posters to their page or whatever. It's like, I was going to do it up. Because
so you sent like a whole promo package.
I did, because if these guys were going to spend 4 hours looking,
right,
I'm going to make it easy for them afterwards to say something good about it, and
that's good
thinking. I think it's if you treat these guys right, I think they, you know, they reciprocate.
They'll
and
be fair.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly.
Wow, cool. Okay, I wanted to talk a little bit about some of the pitfalls of the whole thing. You know,
right.
Having, because no one's working with gigantic budgets, so what?
No,
what
maybe. He did.
It's all relative.
He did do the crowdfunding thing. My budget was right.
What was
here,
the budget on that?
It was $6,000.
Okay. See, that's not.
No.
That's no budget.
Very
low.
Still
less
no
than
budget.
A million.
Yeah.
Budget.
But you've been working
in all reality.
Right.
If
right.
You go to Hollywood and you say, "I made this for $2 million," they still consider that a no
low
budget.
Budget.
No
yeah,
budget.
True.
And
yep.
Oh, budget.
Right. So what are some of the, glaring pitfalls of that?
Once your movie's out there, it's going to be stolen.
Right.
It's going to get on torrent sites. You're not going to be able to control it. I found that people would send me these emails all the time. Tom,
yeah,
I saw your movies for sale on this guy's site. Did you know that? Did you know this? And it's like, you can spend thousands of dollars in attorney fees and all your time trying to track it down, And for how many copies are they really selling anyway? What are they doing? I mean, I saw this one guy who did an excellent version pirating my DVD and made a beautiful cover and all this stuff. I'm like, geez, dude, I should have hired you.
Right.
You're selling my movie and you shouldn't be. And he wrote such a wonderful review of the movie, I just let him do it. I'm like, geez, that's like some of the best press I've ever had. This guy just wrote.
He sort of earned it.
Yeah, but I was like, what the heck? But it's so hard to track it down.
Be warned that if you do have something that does take off,
oh, yeah,
you're going to want to keep an eye on those things. And hire a lawyer. I mean, hopefully it's taking off enough that you can afford lawyers. Because as soon as you stop looking for people who are pirating it, or you let someone get away with it, but then you try to go after a bigger company who's doing it, you've lost all rights to it.
I mean, I know what you're saying, but it's also to get an attorney to do this kind of stuff. I mean, you're talking about $250, $350 bucks a pop.
But I'm talking your movie's really going to go.
Yeah, if you get to that point. But even, I mean, even Hollywood, look at the Hollywood movies.
Yeah.
1, 2, 3 movies? You can watch any freaking movie you want on that site. They got around the whole law. I forget how they got around it, but basically, I mean, they're a legit site, and you can go on there and you can watch, you know, movies that are playing in the theater.
And it
right
sucks
now.
Too because some of the quality is just, oh my God, that'd be the thing that would be crushing.
Yeah, and there's just no way to stop it. So you just hope that, you know, that people will want the physical media, will want to support you as a filmmaker. I mean, I won't lie to you. I mean, I've gone on 1, 2, 3 movies and watched a movie before because it's like, well, I want to see if I like it, and if I like it, then. And it's what I thought I was going to like. Then I go buy the Blu-ray. You know, that's
right.
What I do. If I hated it, guess what?
Yeah.
The silver lining is at least, I mean, you're getting it out to an audience.
Exactly.
So there's some give and take with that. It's people who might not otherwise have seen it, you know.
It might not even have heard of it ever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exposure is nice, but you can die of exposure.
Yeah. Yep, absolutely right.
What about the actual shooting of the movies? Like, what are some of the biggest...
Worst.
You want to tear your hair out, kind of pitfalls.
I think Tom hit on it a little bit before the scheduling logistics.
Yeah,
is always
the worst part.
Planning ahead of time, having everything around and ready.
Yeah, I'd make movies every day if it wasn't for the challenge of getting people together that you need at the time you need them together when the location is available. It's so hard, especially when other people, you know, we've all got day jobs. Your actors all have day jobs. Just that is such an impossible thing. It's discouraging, which is why I kind of find myself enjoying more, you know, the post-production stuff now. It's like, I'd rather edit that guy's movie than make my next movie because he did all the hard work. I just got to edit it and maybe do the soundtrack for it or something. That's a lot more fun. I love directing. I love being on the set. It's getting to that point. It is so hard.
Do you think that's the most frustrating thing?
I think so, more than anything else.
We had 1 week at Monsters Among Men where we flew... Two people in, well, one person we flew in from out of state, the other person came in from out of state, and we had them for 1 week, and we had, those were, we were shooting our main scenes, so we had other actors, we had a dozen actors filming, you know, in different parts, in various parts of the movie shooting, so if one actor in one of the scenes bailed out or couldn't make it, you know, it pretty much sunk the scene, and we would have to figure something out, so just the timing on everything was so tight. That was the most stressful part of the whole production, was just that 1 week and getting all of our shots in that we needed to. And then just being able to get everything in on time so that they could make their flight back. And yeah. And so by the end, I remember there was one scene where I had my shots all laid out. We were going to do some tracking and some different stuff, but we ended up doing handheld. Just because that's what we had time for. Okay, handheld.
Ran out of time.
Yep. Yeah, and thank God, Tom was there with a second camera, so that helps speed things up. Yep, that's another trick to
shoot. More cameras, the better.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
But was that your second movie then?
Yeah, that was my second one, yep.
But the first one wasn't a feature, right?
No, it was 25 minutes short.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. So you just kind of went right into the
right
fire
into
there.
Right into it. I did the short. You know, I'm going to try a feature. And,
yeah, that's cool.
And everything ended up working out, but it was a stressful.
I bet.
Period.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Up all night.
Yeah.
But being on set, once everybody's there, is probably like one of the greatest things ever.
It's like intoxicating.
Yeah, it can be. A little bit.
If everything's rolling right.
In the morning when you're screaming and running in the woods.
In retrospect, it was fun.
Why am I not asleep right now? Yeah.
Okay. And some people were intoxicated.
Right.
At least on my record.
Well, like as an actress, though, when you show up, do you know, like if you talk to a director for a few minutes, can you kind of judge if it's going to be a good shoot or, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. No, I don't, yeah. As an actress, I don't think I've really had a hard time with any certain directors. And
dang it, I was looking for some
cheese. I would you were too easy. Or not, but you had so much to do on set, and it was my first time as a bigger role for full-length feature. That I've worked with other directors that are less technical and more, they've been actors and other things. So they're always like really focused on the actor, but then other things go awry behind them. So it doesn't kind of define some directors and having the right first AD that brings a balance there. Someone keep an eye on the technical stuff while still giving really good attention to the actors is something. There was a lot of Monsters Among Men I went afterwards. I'm like, I hope I did good.
I did. That felt okay. I hope
it went all right.
No, you did awesome. See, you didn't need the direction.
Oh, okay.
You did awesome. But then some of that with the direct, I mean, it's a balance, too, because you're trying to get all your shots in. You need to make sure everything's working out. You're on a time frame.
Right.
Okay, makeup. You know, what's going on with the makeup? Oh, craft services is ready. They've got the food ready. So-and-so needs to eat. And yeah, just on a low budget, trying to wrangle all that stuff up. But
how many hours do you shoot usually?
It depends on the scene. We shot that one scene you were talking about, the night scene. We shot, from the time the sun went down to like 3 a.m. or something like that.
Yeah, it's like 3 or 4. Maybe 4 before I pulled back into town.
And then, we had to get the next scene for availability or whatever the next morning. So I think I slept in my car. You weren't there for that one. You lucked out. And then we got up the next morning and shot again. And then I think we had a break after that. But it was, it was a long couple of shooting days that we had. And then there were other times where we just had to go pick up a couple shots, and it was really short. So it really depended on the scene and the situation and so forth. Because
when you schedule it like, well, hopefully it'll be, 12 to 2 or whatever.
Yeah.
But then it just keeps going.
Oh, gotcha. Right.
You're going to film for 4 hours, get 2 hours beforehand, and then it's probably going to go another 2 hours after.
Yeah.
So really, that's 8 hours of film.
And in that case, we had the makeup done. We had makeup on some of the creatures that we weren't going to be either able to replicate or get our makeup person back for subsequent shots. And so it was like we had to do it that night, however long it took. I guess one thing I want to go back to, as far as the direction for the actors, I knew I was going to be busy during a lot of that time I was directing. So one of the things I tried to do was I actually brought our lead actor in as a producer to kind of help, help guide or help some of the actors along, the ones, who maybe needed that. I don't know if that happened very much.
Jonathan was great, yeah. He and I ran through the scenes several times right before we started. We didn't do any extra read-throughs beforehand or anything like that, or, hours and hours of character development or unnecessary. But, Jonathan was a great help.
Because he knew the script and he knew what we were going for, and so he kind of helped a little bit on that end too, to help mitigate some of that. But
what's the total crew and cast and crew count? Like, you were working with a lot of people, or not very
many?
No, not as many as you wanted to.
Right.
It depended on the volunteers and what their availability was.
Family and friends help out at all, or?
More friends. I'd say. We try to have people. I mean, ideally, I had my cameraman who's there, and then we ideally tried to have someone else do an audio, production assistant.
But not every time?
Not every time.
Okay.
No, as availability, as we were able to. There were times, Like, and that's one reason we had didn't have great audio on the on that one shot that Tom was talking about before we kind of got started, was that that was just me.
Yeah, because by yourself walking backward.
Right. It was just me walking backwards because we had to do some reshoots, and it was at Treetops Resort, which is in northern Michigan, so we didn't have a lot of the cast and crew around. We had to reshoots because one of our actresses we lost after we started shooting, and so we had to just go back with two of the actors, do the reshoots, and then it was just me, and so it was just the three of us filming that one that one scene. So the audio wasn't as great as we wish we could have gotten, but it worked, and it made the movie.
Yeah.
And I had a lav mic on the whole time, which I'm sure helped quite a bit.
Oh, for you? Yeah, absolutely.
That I carried in the backpack.
Yep. Always
constantly,
have.
So, but always paying attention to where the screen
Where's
was
that wire?
For that wire, make sure it wasn't in the shot. And
yeah, we always had backup audio. Mm-hmm. Yep. So we had, Jonathan had a lav mic too. You had one. We weren't monitoring it or anything. It was just on there. And then we also had, I think, a third mic that was just monitor. You know, that we just had going in the background in case we needed to fill some stuff in. But that seemed to work out pretty well. If it wasn't on your mic, we were able to pick it up on Jonathan's. And then if we missed them on both, in worst case scenarios, we had the third.
Yeah, I got to do that a few times.
I got to switch the extra off.
Yeah. Your sound. Uh-oh.
Oh,
she
yeah.
sounds better on Jonathan's mic. Got to bring that one over.
Yep. Did you ever use any of the third mic for ambiance?
Yeah.
That's
yep.
what I was wondering.
Yep. Yep, we did some of that.
You got to have that.
Room tone.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Because otherwise it's like that split and you hear it. And
yeah.
Like, oh.
Yep.
Well, I think that drives me the craziest.
Me too.
So, I wanted to get maybe to the basics of what made you want to start being filmmakers in the first place, you know, maybe influences and stuff like that.
For me, I have almost literally always made movies. My first camera I got when I was 6 years old from my grandfather, and I really didn't know what a movie was. I didn't know that you could just turn the camera on and, like, people could move live. I thought everything was single frame.
Oh.
So my first movies were all stop-motion claymation things. I'm 6, 7 years old, I'm doing all stop-motion claymation because that's how I thought these cameras worked. And
were you using figures?
Mostly I made my own little clay monsters.
Okay.
I was, you know, at that age, I was all sci-fi. And it was like Planet of Death and, you know, Blob Monster and Congo versus Bat Zork. I mean, I had these weird little, they were all little 3-minute movies because that's, you know, the reels.
Right.
It was little 8mm silent stuff. And so I would do those, and by second grade, I was allowed to show them in school. And I'm watching them in school, and at that age, I was like, well, these movies need sound. This is stupid. So then I started adding soundtracks to them, usually stolen from other people's albums, you know, John Williams or whoever, you know, whatever I fit in there. And then I started dubbing them. And then, I don't know, it must have been probably seventh grade before I was like, you mean if I hold this button down, I have to do this one frame at a time?
Oh,
I wasn't making any live action until then, and then all of a sudden it was like, everything opened up, and then I was making, you know, Gamera movies with a giant snapping turtle that I caught in the creek, and I put him on my train board and tried to get him to move, you know, and film him live action stuff. But it was always giant monsters and always, you know, that
right
kind of stuff.
From the beginning.
From the very beginning, it's like I never know a time when I wasn't, you know, interested in doing something.
Was that inspired by things that you watched?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
In those days, this was, you know, the 70s. We had just a couple cable channels that we could get. And
right.
One of them was like Channel 44, one of them was Channel 50, which was KBD, Bill Kennedy at the movies. But there was a chiller. There was always a horror show on like Saturday afternoons.
Yeah.
And like one of the first ones I ever remember seeing was Ghidra the Three-Headed Monster, and it scared the crap out of me. That crazy three heads flying around, you know, I was probably, I don't know, 6. I was like, this is so scary, and I want to do that. And those were the ones that immediately inspired me. And then when I was 11, my mom took me to see Night of the Living Dead on Halloween night. And she didn't know what that movie was. And she took me and my lead actor from Italian Zombie Movie. He was like 9, I was 11. And we didn't sleep probably for a week after that. But then everything was like, oh, we got to do horror movies now.
Right.
This is great once we were able to sleep again.
You were in.
Yep, yep. But those were definitely my inspirations.
That's great.
Yeah, for me, not as extensive as Tom's back.
I'm old.
I
am.
Extensive, you know, was polite.
Yeah.
So he's got to ride home with me.
Right. No, I grew up, you know, with a VHS camcorder. I never had made narrative films, but I was the cameraman for our family. So making home movies.
Was it like attached to your arm type?
Yeah.
That's how I was too.
It was one of those. And I had done some stuff with my brother. Nothing that we ever edited, but goofing around doing stuff. I remember we did like a Siskel and Ebert parody once. And we were really into ninja movies. And so American Ninja and Jean-Claude Van Damme and all that stuff. And so we attempted to do ninja stuff with our VHS camcorder. But other than that, I had always just been into movies, been a movie buff, enjoyed watching movies. And it wasn't until my early 30s when, I had kind of settled down and I had a family. I was kind of looking for something to do on my own that was creative.
Yeah.
And then actually, Italian Zombie movie inspired me to a certain degree. I saw what Thomas.
Again, he's got a ride home.
Yeah. I saw what Tom was doing, and then what's.
I can do better than that.
And then also with what technology, what you can do now, which you could never have done before, about that same time as Italian Zombie movie, and what other filmmakers were doing. You can make a movie, a feature-length movie or a short, edit it yourself on a computer, which you had never been able to do before. And so just the fact that you could even do that kind of inspired me to try something. And so I wrote a screenplay that never got produced.
Send it around?
I sent it. It was a spec screenplay. It was kind of a thriller. So I thought I'd try that first, and then I decided, you know what, I'm going to write a screenplay, and then I'm going to film it. And that ended up being The Suicide King. And then, from there, just kind of got involved with little projects here and there, and then, did Monsters Among Men last year. So that was pretty much...
Your thing was kind of born of necessity, too, then, because you were like, I want to film this.
Yeah.
I have this story. I need to film it.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's so now it's kind of how we got to this point.
Cool. What about you?
See, we'd never really had a camcorder growing up, but I'm sure I would have been hot on it if we had one. But I've always been creative and made things with my hands, so I like a lot of the prop stuff. In high school, we had a musical that we did every other year, and the older director guy that was so sexist. I really didn't like him. So to beat the man, I started the drama club, which still exists in my high school.
That's awesome.
So wow.
That's really cool.
Which was just me going, we should start our own drama club. And then I turn back and then they go, we made you president.
That's what happened.
Okay, I guess we got a drama club now and I'm president. Other people thought that was a great idea. So. Went and did that. Had two kids right after high school, so ended up spending 15 years raising them and being mom and doing all that stuff. But they got about middle school, high school age. I was able to get out of my box and start doing something different. So 5 years ago with Day Planner of the Dead was my first. I just reached out. And I kind of have a fearlessness, but more because I'm naive than anything else. I think I found it through the Flint Zombie Walk. They had, we want extras, or there's a couple roles, so send in an audition tape. So I'm like, okay, well, I've never been in anything, so it's me in front of a camera, but I recruited the kids into helping me and made them made them dress up in zombie makeup and pretend they were coming in after school like zombies, and you couldn't really see them. And by the time I'm done, I'm like, thank you for listening, and the kids are like right on top of me or gonna eat me.
Clever.
Bye.
Yeah, that's clever.
And it got me an audition.
Mm-hmm.
And then got to
meet. That was Day Planner.
For Day Planner, okay. Yep. Never did any acting, just kind of one afternoon like, let's make an audition video today. And send it in, and here we have all of our friends. Meeting all the different people, going to cons is so
networking.
Huge. And just, networking and just being a good person in general when you're out and about.
Some of that people want to deal with and have projects for.
Don't ever be that person on set that's demanding and hard to work with, because you will never, never, never get asked.
No matter how good you are.
It doesn't.
People aren't going to put up with that. I hear Kevin Smith talking about Bruce Willis.
I mean, a lot of people.
Bruce Willis?
Yeah. Well, you know, they don't want to deal with it.
Yep, yep.
They got enough stuff to deal with. Right. Everything else that they're trying to make this. And why do this collaborative thing? You're not going to get to be collaborative.
And didn't we, I think I met you at Flint Horror Con.
Yeah.
So collaboration, exactly.
Yeah. This
Yay.
This is happening.
She was great. I think you were Ash.
Yes, I was a female Ash.
I remember that.
Pinup contest.
Yep.
And then you were Orangela after that. She had the orange dress on somewhere that I...
Well, and the Flint Horror Con had a few weeks beforehand showed Suicide Kings. Yep. Mm-hmm. And I went up, I saw his stand at one of these booths. I went up to him and said, I really like your dialogue writing. I just thought that was a really great movie. And then maybe 6 months later or a year later, you got a hold of me. You want to be in this trailer? Sure.
Yeah. Also, you made the trailer.
Yeah, so what we ended up doing, we knew we were going to crowdfund it. At least most of it was crowdfunding dollars, is that we were going to film a trailer first for it to kind of give an idea of what it was going to be like, show that we could do it, and so forth. And so
try to raise funds for it that way.
Yep, exactly. And so we shot the trailer just over a one day shoot. Angela actually played a different character in the trailer.
In that one, yep.
Yep. And so that was that was a little mini audition too for the role. And she did a great job, and it worked out really well. But we did the trailer. We included that. In the crowdfunding campaign, and then we had the folks that worked on the trailer to help promote the crowdfunding campaign, our actors, and the production people to help raise funds that way. So that's kind of how that came about. And then Angie did such a great job for that. We asked her to be in the actual film, although it was for a different character, which I think you were happy about.
Going through and it occurred to you, like, oh, I bet she could do that? Or
yeah, that was part, yes. I think you could have played.
More fun.
Yeah.
I think you could have played both. Funner especially, part. Again, you were the Ash, so it was it played for, you had to play kind of a tougher girl in that. I think we knew you could do it. And we saw you some of your audition clips too. I can't remember what they were from, but you had sent me some clips.
Yeah, I think from other stuff.
From Reaper.
Yeah.
Well, that kind of touched on a little bit of another thing I wanted to ask about, which is raising money. Like these are not, again, high budget films, but you have to have some kind of seed money. Mm-hmm. So what do you do?
Yeah, I'm not a crowdfunding guy. I just do it myself. Mm-hmm. I do so much
you pay
of
out
the
of pocket?
Film.
Yep. Okay.
I do so much of the film myself anyway. I mean, I write the music, I edit it,
right.
I direct it, I write the movie. You know, sometimes unfortunately I have to act in it.
And that's all necessity type stuff.
Pretty much, okay. Yeah. So for me it's usually a matter of, you know, props, makeup effects. I try to cast locally to get volunteers who want to do this stuff locally for most of my stuff to this point, mostly because it takes me so darn long to finish a movie.
Right.
That I can't be asking somebody 2 years later to come up from Nashville and, you know, and finish.
Right.
Because my process, because I have to do so much of it alone, it just takes longer. So by necessity, I've done it that way. I'm not against, you know, hiring actors and bringing them in, but I really have to have everything planned out pretty well to you know, so we wouldn't go through what we went through last time. But I think crowdfunding is great if you've got, you know, you got the idea and you're going to need that. But for me, I think I'm going to try to do it out of pocket.
Mm-hmm.
I can make my movies for, you know, $5,000.
Right.
I can handle that sort of.
So like even with the editing and the composing and all that, would you still prefer to do that yourself?
The editing and composing, absolutely. I'd farm out directing.
Right.
I enjoy directing when I'm doing it. I don't enjoy the scheduling and all that logistical stuff. I did have a script supervisor help me on my last film. That made a huge difference. And she was a volunteer. She went to Michigan State, and I went to State. We just kind of connected later. And what she brought to the set was fantastic, because I didn't have to worry about the lines anymore.
That's nice.
Because I'm running two cameras at the same time, and I could just focus on how did that look. And she's checking the lines and making sure that, you know, that to me was almost indispensable from that point on. It's like, I'm going to have a script supervisor from now
every
on.
Time.
Nothing else matters. But But yeah, it's definitely challenging, but I'm really into the post-production side of things even more than the actual shooting now. I even like color correction thing. That's weird.
Well, because that's kind of where the story gets to come together.
It does. You get to it's so make rewarding the book, so to see speak. It. And I did other people's films. I've done that a couple times. And sometimes they're really good, and they have notes where their scenes are. And other times they send me their files, like, find it. It's like, oh, God.
Wow.
But it is very rewarding to just have all that just random stuff and be able to put it all together. And that phase of it is what I just enjoy most now.
Awesome. You crowdfunded for that movie, but did that cover everything? That's what I was thinking. I figured it probably didn't. Yeah.
It covered a good, trying to remember the breakdown. It was a $6,000 film. I think I put a couple grand of it into it myself. Some of it was crowdfunding, and then we actually got an associate producer, actually that Angie had a contact with, that I think gave us like $500 or a certain portion of it. And then we had that to work from. That wasn't, we were going for $10,000.
Okay.
To do the movie, and so we had to make concessions to make up for that $4,000. That
so
we,
when you went
we
through to
have.
Get to that figure, that was you it budgeted was, certain things for each specific.
Yep. Okay. Yep. That's what the figure came from. I think it was ten that we were. I think we may have been going for 12, hoping to get 10.
Right.
Yeah, it was 12, and then but 10 was what the magic number was, and we didn't get to that. So yeah, we had to cut down some things, some of the line items to get down to 6, but we were able to do it. It's just I guess a matter of what you can live with and what you can't.
And then you did have to pay some out of pocket, obviously.
Yeah, had to pay some out of pocket. So I think it was $3,500 or something is what we ended up getting with the crowdfunding campaign.
Because I think a lot of times people that don't make movies think, well, this doesn't cost that much. Why are you asking for $1,000? Mm-hmm. Like, the cheapest movie that I made was $300 or $400 still. You know,
yeah.
And that's just for like a 5 or 6 minute short film.
Yeah. And that's not feeding everyone on set. I've
right, exactly.
I've noticed that a
right,
lot of.
Right.
I've done another film with my friend Ginny, and it was the 36 hour film contest. But between her and I, we kept everybody fed because I think
it's important.
That's important.
That was the biggest.
Because everybody will leave.
Yeah.
Like, I'm hungry.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Their payment for a lot of this.
Right.
Stuff is like they at least get a hot dog and
right.
maybe $10 in gas and money.
You get a screen credit, gas money, and dinner.
Yeah. Yeah.
Travel costs. I mean,
yeah.
Airline tickets, just gas money.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's what we
adds up
to.
So fast. And,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, food was the biggest expense. And then the visual effects, some of that stuff.
That's what's going to be my next question. So, what are some of the challenges of the effects? Because there's some pretty cool stuff in there. I mean, it's subtle sometimes,
mm-hmm.
but it's it has to work.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
My favorite gag from our movie that worked the best was I use a scalpel to
yeah.
cut myself to lubricate handcuffs to get them off, right? And like it's a normal everyday thing. But that it just had a tube with the blood on the one side, and I squeezed the little ball, and it came out, and oh, it looks so good.
How many
just
takes?
Like little, just the one, I think,
wow.
maybe two.
Yeah, I think we got in two, but yeah.
Wow, because it looks pretty effective.
Yeah, my sister, the nurse, after she watched it, she's like, "How did you do that?"
Yeah. Some of the stuff is really simple, but then some of the stuff. Like, we had, there was one scene where we had a guy in, vampire makeup, and it didn't work out because of the lighting and everything. So we had to go in digitally, enhance
okay.
it.
In After Effects.
In After Effects, yeah.
A
so
major undertaking.
Yes, it was.
Because vampires are cool looking.
Yeah, they turned out.
Vampire
things,
yeah,
we were pretty happy with how everything turned out.
In that one, we didn't have any motion tracking stuff, so we were just finding
yeah,
it.
Yeah, kind of a...
It was one of the creatures... in the movie and kind of see
that's pretty good looking and pretty effective.
And I think that was all makeup. This
that
one
guy
was
makeup, yeah. yeah. That was all makeup.
This was also our cameraman.
Yeah.
Who played one
that
of the
says it in a nutshell.
And in the movie you'll hear the screeching sound. All of that was him too.
Yep.
Multi-talent. Yeah, he said have you ever heard a because the Lord of the Rings movies had come out. You ever heard a Nazgul scream? And I said, yeah, but why?
Yep.
And then he did that scream. I'm like, oh, we got to do a take on that. For the creature sounds.
So some of that stuff's kind of complicated, though. Like, Were you using green screen?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, for Monsters Among Men, for those scenes he's talking about, it was just basically motion tracking in the post to try to come up with sort of a little bit of a CGI face that we could then blend into the face without it being obvious, and then getting it to track right on.
Right.
But again, it wasn't ever intended. We thought the makeup at the time was going to be enough, but because of the lighting, it's like, God, we couldn't see anything except that even his contact didn't stand out. So we had to give him a different eye and the whole thing. And you shot it, what, 60 frames a second?
Yeah.
Oh, don't ever do that again. It works. It was great for the slow motion. Yeah. Boy, to go through every in that sequence, because there's a whole sequence. You don't just see him. Then he's like fighting and shooting and all this stuff. So that whole sequence we had, I don't know how many thousands of frames.
Oh, my God.
One frame at a time to do it in three dimensions. And I didn't do a lot of this, but I helped the guy that did. And he would call me up and just complain, God, I'm never going to be able to finish it. Why did he shoot it at 60? Can we do something? Do you have any other footage? I'm like, that's it, dude. We got to do it.
Take out every other frame.
Yeah. It was really challenging. Then we had other stuff that wasn't so challenging. Like, I remember the hatchet in the chest shot. It was just, it looked like the blade only went into his chest about that far on the angle that we had, so we had to, like, lower the whole hatchet into the chest.
It looked like it sunk into his chest.
Which we could do in After Effects, and I think we did a little bit of light wave stuff in there. But I'm not a huge proponent of CGI movies. I'm kind of bored with them. I, would rather see the miniatures and stuff like that. But I think it's, there are some really good ones. You can do some amazing stuff with it, and especially you can fix things with it.
Right.
That's what I tend to do with it mostly.
We got a few minutes left. I was wondering if anybody had any questions for these guys.
The peanut gallery.
I've had the pleasure to work with Angie before. I think she's amazingly talented. When is she going to direct?
She says she's working on something, right? Are you got something in the works?
Yep. So working on an hour-long HBO-style show. Hopefully I'll be producing and directing that.
Is it like a pilot?
I'm hoping to shoot the trailer. I've got the treatment pretty well done. The first episode's getting there. And then once I've got those pretty solid and I shoot a trailer, I'm just going to shop it out and see who buys it and gives me money to make it a not no budget show. And what else? Working on some animation stuff. I just finally got through work all the Adobe suites, so I'm just geeked to play with that.
Awesome.
I'm so excited. And and then my friend Ginny, she and I have a couple of little projects that I'm not quite sure on the format yet.
Cool.
But cool ideas.
Awesome. Anybody else? Sir?
Out of all the movies in the world now, like Lost, Lost films,
well, I've got a real obscure one for you. There was a Japanese version of King Kong.
Oh, I know
that. Yeah, that got lost during the bombing of, Hiroshima. And I don't think it will ever be found. Everybody's hoping that somewhere there's some pieces of this film somewhere. I would just love to see it because it was
a university vault or something.
Maybe somebody had it somewhere. And there's rumors of it every now and then. But, it was the first, basically my person in a rubber suit monster movie before Godzilla. And it was like lost.
Yeah.
And I would love to find if that could ever be found. I'm sure it can. It's just a dream.
Yeah.
But you asked.
London After Midnight haunts me.
That'll turn out. I just
haven't. I keep thinking that year after year. I'm like, it's going to be found, and there'll be some fake. They found it. No.
I think any film footage that's on the brink of being lost is worth saving.
Yeah.
And just for history's sake. We're so used to all this digital and stuff now. And then the people that do restore it and how hard it is to restore it and breathing in those old chemicals and fumes and stuff. It's a big ordeal. So hats off to anybody that finds it and renovates it and gets it back out there for us to see.
Yeah. Yeah. Any other questions? Well, I got a softball to close it out.
Softball?
What's everybody's favorite horror movie?
Oh. That's so hard. That's not a softball.
It's not a softball.
But I'm gonna tell you, it's because it just when
well, you can name more than one or two.
I will just name one.
Okay.
When anybody says that, this is the first one that pops to mind. It's called Mystics in Bali. If you haven't seen it, seek it out. It's Mondo Macabro has it, and it is the most amazingly crazy, whacked out And that's what I love. I love crazy, whacked out movies, but it's horrible too. I mean, it's got horror elements. It's got everything. And
how many times have you seen it?
I've seen it, and I only recently came across it. So
okay.
I probably came across it maybe 5 years ago, and I've seen it at least 10 times.
Nice.
And I could watch it tonight when I come. No, I probably will.
You probably will now.
Probably watch it tonight.
That's awesome.
You know, it's funny you say that because it actually got out my favorite horror movie to watch. If we got back tonight at whatever time, it's Dog Soldiers.
Yeah,
yeah, that's yeah, early 2000s.
I just gave that to my dad for
werewolf
his birthday.
Movie.
Oh, awesome!
It's just the dialogue, the practical effects. I don't know. It's just the action. It's just a perfect film for me. That's also John Carpenter's The Thing is probably been my second. Just the paranoia, the musical score,
practical effects.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah. Crazy cool.
Yeah, those are my two.
Monsters Among Men.
Yeah!
That was the softball answer.
The acting is great. Yeah, yeah.
It's amazing.
There's this one girl.
Yeah.
All right, well, thank you guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
And if you, Monsters Among Men is available streaming on Amazon Prime.
Yeah, and it's good. I watched it last night.
Which,
really
which
cool.
streaming service gives you the most money?
That's a good question, actually.
Well,
I'd say
I don't recall which one actually dollar for dollar per hour gives me the most, but Amazon by far has the most watches. And I mean, first off, when it started, it actually had a pretty decent revenue stream, but then after it tapers off.
Yeah.
Kind of interested to see how it does this month.
Yeah, with Halloween season.
I had my Halloween documentary up, and I think it got about 300. Which I was feeling pretty good about, you know. So that was a decent amount of money. But that's the only place that I've ever had it streamed, so I can't compare.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah.
On Prime?
Yeah. Not even Prime. Just their little, you know, Amazon Video, which I think they've kind of tapered out.
Yeah, it's kind of faded out. Yeah, I used to do that too. Gotcha.
All right.
All right.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks. Thank you.
Super fun.
That was fun. Great job.
Thank you.
You're a natural moderator.
You are.
Thank you. Oh, yeah, I've got this too. So.
You've got a great voice.
Thank you.
For this stuff.